Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Good morning. I'm going to sit up straight. I want to talk this morning about three wonderful things that happened this week. The first wonderful thing happened over several days, but I'm going to start with Sunday. On Sunday, I went to the wedding in a Quaker ceremony of Chris Curtis and Susan DeVries. Some of you know Chris. She used to be a member here, and she's still a good friend. I know Tim knows her because she was here every morning for a number of years, every morning for morning zazen. So they got married in McAllister Chapel in a Quaker ceremony. Excuse me, last Sunday. And Chris wanted a Buddhist presence, she called it. So that was me. I read a selection from the Loving Kindness Sutra. I want to tell you a little bit about Chris and Susan. They've been together for about 15 or 20 years. And they came into the relationship, each one of them, with a young son. And they, after a number of years, sort of acquired another son. They met a boy who needed a family and a couple of moms in his life. And so they acquired another son. And then a number of years later, they kind of acquired a daughter and her children. So now they have three sons, a daughter, and some grandchildren. And a number of years ago, a while ago, they exchanged rings and vows in a private ceremony, just the two of them. And they said they weren't going to have a big hoopla wedding until they could have a big hoopla wedding that was legal in Minnesota. So, and they were perfectly happy, I think, that way, or they said they were. And then last winter, one of the other of them said, I want to have a big hoopla wedding with all of our friends and family there. And I know we said we were going to wait for this, but I want to have a big... And so they prepared a big hoopla wedding, and it was last Sunday. It was on Mother's Day, appropriately enough. And it was a wonderful wedding. And while they were preparing for their wedding, a funny thing happened. With amazing timing, things started happening in the legislature. And on Thursday, the Minnesota House passed the Marriage Equality Act. And everybody knew, we knew, quote, that the Senate was going to pass it on Monday. We were sure. Everyone was sure, but you know how you're sure, but you're kind of like this? So that really... So we were quite certain that the Senate was going to pass it on Monday, and then Governor Dayton had said that he was happily going to sign it as soon as it passed. So this added something even more wonderful to this marriage celebration. There was a little girl there, about 8 years old. Excuse me. And she had on this skirt, this one of these fluffy skirts that little eight-year-old girls wear, with a purple t-shirt that said Quakers for Marriage Equality. The sight I will never forget. So on Monday, the Senate did pass the act, and on Tuesday the governor did sign it, and there was a huge, huge party and hoopla in St. Paul. And starting on August 1st, a whole lot of people are going to go down to their city halls and get marriage licenses and make legal what's been true all along, that these are wonderful, happy, loving marriages that the state is finally getting around to acknowledging. So that's the first wonderful thing that happened this week. And the other two are, it's historic, right? The other two are not on that scale, in case you're wondering. Did I miss something? But I'm telling these sequentially, so that one happened Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. The other two both happened in this building. I don't want to say they were small. They were wonderful. But they were moments, the other two. The second wonderful thing that happened this week happened last Monday evening in this room. And a number of you were here. A number of you were here. On Monday nights right now, I'm teaching a sewing class with Tomoe Katagiri, who is a master of Nyohe, the way of sewing, type of Zen sewing. And she's also the widow of our founder. And I think she's going to be over here later on, by the way. This is our 40th anniversary year, and so we're kicking off our 40th anniversary celebrations today. At 2:00, and you're all invited. We're having a celebration, and Andrea Martin is going to be speaking, and there's going to be multimedia, and she's going to talk about the origins of this place and Katagiri and his history, and it's going to be just wonderful. So I think that you should stay for the tea, and then go for a walk around the lake, or if it's raining, go out to lunch. And then come back here at 2:00 and come to the celebration with us. So anyway, back to last Monday. So Tomoe and I were here. We were teaching this class. And I've been doing this kind of sewing since 1997, which is when I met Tomoe. And she teaches the sewing that we use to sew Buddha's robe. So right now we're teaching a class on sewing the Raksu, which is it's a small version of the Buddha's robe. You make one of those as part of preparation for Zen initiation. For those people who become ordained as priests, you make a big one that wraps all around you. And for those people who receive Dharma transmission or permission to teach independently, you make another one, a brown one, that wraps all around you. And actually, they all wrap all around you. Ryokan said, Zen poet said, Oh that my robe were wide enough to wrap around all the beings in the suffering world. And that's what the robes really do. But on Monday night, we were teaching how to sew the Raksu. And there are 25 people who are going to be going through Zen initiation here this August. And that's a process in which people study the Zen precepts and decide that they are going to live their lives according to the Buddha way. And one of the things that they do is sew this robe, and they sew it in a very particular way. So on Monday night, just as the class was starting, I was telling everyone that I was reminding them that when we sew, we aren't talking, we aren't listening to the radio, we aren't watching TV, we're just sewing. We're just sewing. And with every stitch that we take, we say, I take refuge in Buddha. I take refuge in Dharma. I take refuge in Sangha. So in some ways, it's just like Zazen. You know, we're doing this, and thoughts come up, and emotions come up, and we notice that we're having these thoughts and emotions, and we just let them go. And it's the same thing with this. We're sewing, you know, and maybe we get a knot in the thread or something. Like, oh! And then we just let go of that frustration of that moment. Or we're sewing along and we're like, I'm sewing on Buddha's robe. This is pretty cool. I'm on the high Buddha seat here. And when that happens and we notice that we're doing that, we just let that go too. And then, and here's the wonderful thing that happened. And then Timoy spoke up. And at this point, you have to imagine an 81-year-old, 4'10" Japanese lady with a big smile. And she said, the raksu is the design of the raksu, and the design of the robe is based on a rice paddy. And with every stitch that you put into your raksu, you're putting in a rice seed. And you're planting the Dharma. And then every time you pull the stitch back through, the rice is growing up. The shoot of rice is growing up. And she said, eventually, you put in you plant the rice, and eventually you have a field that's covered with rice. And she said, and there are a lot of creatures living in this field. There are lots of creatures living in this field. And when you're all done, you have a field of rice that will feed all the Buddhas in the Buddha world. And it was one of those moments where, I don't know about the rest of you, but I was just kind of slack-jawed. You know, I thought, afterwards, when I kind of came to, I said, I'm going to remember that moment for the rest of my life. I checked with Cindy later, and she said she felt it too. When I was driving home that night, I started thinking about that and about Chris and Susan and how for the last 15 or 20 years, they've been planting these seeds with each other and with their boys and with their daughter and with their grandkids. They've been planting these seeds and watching the shoots come up. And all the people for the past, I think it's 40 years, people have been pushing for this law to take place. 40 years, myriad beings have been making phone calls, have been lobbying. I think they've been lawsuits, have been talking to their friends and neighbors. 40 years of people planting rice seeds. Myriad beings, that's how this works. And finally, on Tuesday, the rice field emerged and all beings rejoiced. So, that was the second wonderful thing that happened this week. And third wonderful thing that happened this week also happened in this building. And that was that our Dharma sister, Bonnie Verbancourt, received Dharma transmission, her permission to teach independently from Tim Burkett last night. Where is Bonnie? I know she's here. She's hiding. Hi, Bon. Bonnie started studying Buddhism right in this room in the 70s with Katagiri Roshi. And she was ordained in 1997 and with Sosan Teresa Flynn and Ryotan Mary Layman. And I imprinted on those ladies very early because in 1997, when they were sewing their priest robes, I was sewing my raksu. And they would get together on Thursday mornings at Bonnie's house and sew. And they invited anyone in my group who wanted to come sew with them to come sew. And so I would go over there on Thursday mornings, and it was like I was the fifth grader with the big girls. And we all sewed together, and I imprinted on them like a little duck, you know. I still kind of feel that way about those three. And they helped me sew my first raksu. A couple of years later, Bonnie moved to Maine. And she, you know, when you take that vow stays with you. And sometimes the vow stays with you when you are sort of between teachers. So she was in Maine, and she was still a priest in training and maintaining her vow. And a few years later, or at some point in this misty history, she got in touch with Tim and said, "Tim, I would like to continue my training with you." And Tim said, "Yes." I think Tim's middle name should be Yes. I thought that for a long time. There are days when I've really thought it should be Yes. Tim said Yes. Sometimes your middle name is No. But a very kind no, even when it's no. Tim said, "Sure." So Bonnie started distance training as a priest from Maine, here at Minnesota, between Maine and here, and Maine and here. And so she's been traveling back and forth a lot. She'd be here for long periods of time. She came here last fall and led the practice period, wonderful practice period, on anger. Anger. And started sewing her brown robe. A number of us got to help sew on it. And then she went back to Maine. Spent some time earlier this month, number of weeks in a Thich Nhat Hanh monastery getting ready for her Dharma transmission. And got here, what, about a week ago, Bonnie? Got here about a week ago with her robe not quite done, but we knew that because the end, parts of the ends of sewing the robe are a little bit tricky. And so several of us had told her, "Well, we'll help you finish it up." And so this last week, Bonnie moved into the third floor upstairs in preparation for Dharma transmission. And this is a private ceremony that happens face-to-face between the student and the teacher. So I'm not going to talk about it. I'll just tell you that Bonnie was upstairs in near seclusion. And one of the things that you do for 3 days is, it's kind of like the practice of sewing the robes. You write out the transmission documents. You copy the transmission documents. And it's the same kind of thing. You know, you're sewing, and there's times when it's wonderful, and there's times when it's difficult, and you're doing it quietly and silently by yourself with a little bit of help and supervision from other people. And so Tim would be here mornings, and Susan Nelson and I were here a lot during the day, and she and I would sew on the robes, and Phoebe came and sewed on the robes. Some other people came by. One morning, Eric and Mark were here sewing on their rock suits with us while we sewed on the robes, and it was lovely. And every so often, Susan and I would go upstairs and check in with her. "Do you have any questions? Is there anything we can help you with? Do you need anything?" And it was just a wonderful kind of quiet, lovely sewing the robes, copying documents, being around week at the Zen Center. I want to tell you one story about something that happened this week. To Bonnie and me. The last thing that you do when you sew the big robes is you sew these patches on them, and it's called a daiza, and it's kind of a complicated piece of sewing, and I've sewn a number of them on people's robes, but it's the very last thing you do. And you try not to think about the fact that you're almost done with the sewing. And you have to place them on the robe just so, in kind of a counterintuitive way. And I have more than once sewn them on backwards and had to take them off and sew them back on. And so today, or this week on Thursday when I was sewing them, I was trying really, really hard to make sure they were on there exactly right, on the right side, because I know that I'm not so good at making sure that they're on right. So I checked the book, and I held it up and looked at it and looked at the book. You know where this is going, right? Does anybody not know where this is going? All the people who are in the Rock Soup class are really enjoying this story right now, aren't you? I measured it, I'll bet, 3 times. And then I sat down with one of the dies, the first dies, and I sewed it, and it took about an hour. And halfway through, I looked at it, and I went, that's wrong, that's not right. And so I got out my ruler and looked at it. I went, measured it, and looked at the... No, that's right, it's fine. So I finished sewing it for the rest. And then I got done and held it up and said, oh, I better, you know, I'll see where it falls on me, because Bonnie and I are the same size. So I knew where it would fall on my shoulder. So I picked it up and put it on. You know, I don't believe it. I sewed it on backwards. You know, and you know, everybody knows this feeling, right? You know, it's just... It's so far beyond, it's just disbelief. I check that thing how many times? Every time I tell the story, it's more times. All of you in this class are going to get this at some point. You're going to go up to Tamoy and you're going to say, but I checked. So I'm just standing there. I just can't believe it. I'm just in this disbelief. And so I put it down, and I said, maybe I need to just walk away from this for a few minutes. So I kind of walked around the porch for a few minutes. I was kind of shaking, you know. Kind of walked around the porch for a minute. And then I thought about this book that was sitting up on Kimberly's desk. And I thought, I'll bet there's something in that book that would help me right now. It's a book called Training in Compassion, Zen Teachings on the Practice of Lojong, and it's by Norman Fisher, and the reason it's on her desk is because he's coming here in a couple of weeks. And I thumbed through it, so I knew there'd be something in there that would help me. And so I went to the table of contents and looked down, and then I saw there was a chapter called Transform Bad Circumstances into the Path. I sat in Kimberly's office and read that chapter, and it helped me. I'll tell you what, it helped me. Then I kind of had the book in my hand, and I came downstairs and went in the kitchen to get a glass of water. And there was Bonnie getting a glass of water. And I said, hi, Bon, how's it going? And she said, not so well. Or words to that effect. Because Bonnie had been up on the third floor doing some of her work and was having kind of a hard morning with her work. And that's her story to tell. But anyway, Bonnie was having kind of the same situation upstairs at the same time that I was having it on the front porch. And I said, boy, do I have something to read to you. So we went upstairs and we looked at her stuff to see what we could do about it. And then I read her just about a paragraph and a half from the chapter Transform Bad Circumstances into the Path. And he's talking in here about the Lojong slogan. They're called Lojong slogans. And they're just sayings that we learn and we kind of internalize, and you can sort of memorize them and work with them so that when things happen, they just kind of naturally come up and help remind you what you should do. And here's what he says. So when these things happen, the slogan pops into our minds because we've trained ourselves on it. Turn all of this into the path, the slogan tells us. So we practice patience. We catch ourselves running away, and we reverse course, turning toward our afflictive emotions, understanding that they are natural in these circumstances. They are natural in these circumstances. But that avoiding them won't work, and there is no use blaming ourselves or wishing that things were otherwise. And that was certainly true. We know that this is how the human heart works. This is how we all are. We forestall our flailing around with these emotions and instead allow them to be present with dignity. We forgive ourselves for having them. And with that spontaneous forgiveness comes a feeling of relief and even gratitude. We think, I'm pretty upset right now. But this upset is what people feel under such conditions. And of course I feel this way. And I am grateful to feel what everyone feels under these conditions. I'm grateful. I am glad to stand in solidarity and understanding with other human beings who are probably right now, in this very moment, on the third floor, also feeling this. Here's the very next sentence. This may strike you as a bit far-fetched. I love Norman Fisher. But it does take training. We are, after all, this is important, not talking about miracles. We are not talking about affirmations or wishful thinking. We are talking about training the mind. When I read that, Bonnie said, read that one part again. So I'm going to read that one part again. I am grateful to feel what everyone feels under such conditions. I am glad to stand in solidarity and understanding with other human beings who are probably right now, in this very moment, also feeling this. So, as we're sewing our robes, as we're sewing our roxus this summer, and as we're copying documents, as we're driving on the highway and being cut off by other people, and as we're having wonderful, happy celebrations of weddings, we remember that it's all sowing these seeds. We're sowing these seeds. And then the shoots are rising up. And the shoots are rising up. And the rice paddies are being planted. And we're ordaining. And we're studying. And we're working closely with Tim. And we're working closely with our other teachers. And Susan and I are down here on the porch sewing. And Bonnie is upstairs. People are lobbying their legislators. And everybody's efforts together are planting those seeds and tending the shoots. And at all times, not just this week, but at all times, all beings are benefiting from the harvest of our practice. And those are the three wonderful things that happened this week. We are having a reception after this to celebrate Bonnie's transmission. And because of that, I promised I would keep my talk to half an hour. And guess what? I did, but I didn't leave any time for questions or comments. Sorry. We can talk during the tea, which the weather is at this moment cooperating on. But first we have some announcements.